Welcome to The Jump. I am Rachel Nichols, joined in studio by our NBA sideline reporter, and as he just mentioned, ESPN LA radio host, George Sedano. So I'm so glad we get, it's amazing that even this feels so close and wonderful.
Totally.
Here we are in 2020. And Brian, we miss you. Coming to you from the Cobra Dome, though, it's our insider, New York Times bestseller, Brian Windhorst. We're very happy you are with us as well. Coming up, it appears that James Wiseman might not want to play for the Minnesota Timberwolves. Is it worth taking the risk on drafting him anyway out there? We will get to that later in our countdown to the draft segment. First, though, now that we know this upcoming season will be 72 games, it is time to examine that a little bit further. Reducing the regular season games, that number, we've been talking about it right for years. And now, due to COVID, we will at least get to see a little bit of what that experiment looks and feels like. Now, since the league instituted an 82-game schedule, that was back in 1968, the fewest regular season games played were 50 games in 99 due to the lockout and 66 games in 2012 for the same reason. Most teams played about 70 games last season, of course. So, Brian, I know you have looked into this extensively. Kevin Arnovitz here at ESPN has looked into this for years. Is 72 games actually an ideal length, not just this coming season, but going forward?
I hate to be the Scrooge on this, Rachel, because I just have to be real. No, it's not. Maybe 2 years ago when the cash was flying in and everybody was flush, but 72 games means 10 less games, 10 less game checks, 5 less home games for each of these teams. And this season will not duplicate it because they're going to be doing it on a tightened schedule. So it's actually going to feel like busier than a regular 82-game schedule. And with the players and owners trying to make up lost money from last season and then this season in the future, I just don't see any reduction in games anytime in the near future. I suppose the asterisk on that could be if there's some sort of mid-season tournament or play-in tournament that becomes part of the schedule that alters the regular season, I guess you could bring it down, but I don't think we're going to see a reduction short-term.
See, I'm totally into this, Rachel. I'm going to go on the flip side of this. Okay. I think that moving forward, we should absolutely be thinking about this for the reasons that Brian outlined. The mid-season tournament, that's something you can sell. There are TV rights that are involved with that. By the way, you could also sell the TV rights to the play-in game for the tournament. For the NBA playoffs.
Yeah.
Right? So I think all those things can be on the table. You can find ways to potentially make up for lost games with TV revenue or additional TV revenue.
I mean, it will be interesting, right? Some of the people who've been pushing for less games, Brian Wright, have said, hey, you could just charge a little bit more per game, right? Except you're not getting ticket revenue either way this year anyway. I do think we just have to come to terms with the fact that we're still going to be in flux in this country for quite some time. And so we got 72 games this season. Let's see what happens next season. I think it will be at least one more season of a little bit making it up as we go along, even if it's just trying to recoup a little bit of what happened in the 2021 season. Now, we do know that we're starting December 22nd, right? Which means we get Christmas Day games.
Yep.
It's official. So, George, you have been thinking about this. I want to know who you want to see go to head-to-head on Christmas Day. You even have a schedule for us.
Apparently. Oh, I'm ready. I'm glad you asked this question, Rachel, because I've already put this on Twitter. And, you know, everybody on Twitter loves everything that everyone writes. Of course, wasn't the case.
Totally positive feedback only.
Yeah, only the case. Right. So let's look at this slate here. I've got the noon game. I'm giving you times. Give me Sixers-Celtics, both on the East Coast. You get an Eastern Conference rivalry game there. Then the next game, which is the 2:30 Eastern game, give me two big stars. Give me the Bucks with Giannis, and give me the Pelicans with Zion. It's in the central time zones. So it's not as early as having to play maybe at 11 a.m.
Right.
Then we get to the 5:30 East Coast game, which is the prime game of the slate. Mm-hmm. Give me the finals rematch. Lakers, Heat. Then we're getting petty. Here, we're getting to the petty part of the schedule here. All right, after that, 8 Eastern. Give me KD and the Nets traveling to the Warriors. That would be circled on everyone's particular calendar. And then the last of the petty matchups, the Clippers at home taking on the Denver Nuggets. And I also get 2 LA games in there. So maybe if we can all go to the arena, or at least we can go to the arena, and catch 2 games. Yes.
By the way, so you're bringing the petty. That reminds that Steel Magnolia's line, right? If you don't have anything nice to say, come sit by me. Apparently that's you, George Sedano.
Yes.
Brian, do you feel that we can get all of those matchups in, or are some of those going to go on opening night, December 22nd?
Well, here we go again with me having to be Scrooge and having to bring the realist. I think those are fun matchups, George, but that necessitates two teams going coast to coast in the first week of the season, and the NBA is looking to reduce travel by 25% or more this year. So I think they're going to try to keep teams local, especially on Christmas. Now, yes, as you mentioned, Rachel, there's going to be Ring Night, which will be on TNT, and then there's going to be Christmas Day games, which will be on ABC and ESPN. I'm sure there's heavy negotiations with our bosses and bosses over in at Turner to figure that out. But I think that the game that you will see as the centerpiece game will be Warriors-Lakers. And the reason that is because not only do you bring Steph Curry and Klay Thompson back from the national audience has not seen in a while, but also you're going to have, unless the Warriors make a big trade, a top three pick in this draft to be displayed possibly in his first game. Could be James Wiseman's first game in addition to the defending champion Lakers. That's a delicious matchup. You have it at 5 o'clock, which is 2 o'clock on the West Coast. I'm not saying I don't like Lakers Heat, George, but I think it's more likely the West Coast teams stay out here.
That's interesting. And look, we'll have to see, right, whether the schedule in terms of them trying to get teams in different parts of the country. I could see them saying, great, X team from the West Coast, you are just starting your rotation on the East Coast because it's important for us to get these games in. We'll have to see. I know, George, you mentioned the Pelicans as well. I am very interested to see how all of the television schedulers, both on the network side and on the NBA side, want to put the Pelicans in those prime games because they learned last season it's a gamble. If Zion Williamson is playing, ratings are huge. Excitement is huge. I mean, I felt like everybody was sitting on the edge of their seat in front of their TV when he was playing toward the end of the season. But, of course, there were so many games he didn't play. And Christmas last year is a good example. They had him and the Pelicans in those prime spots. And he was not on the court for those, so we will see how the schedule is made this year. All right, guys, coming up, new Rockets general manager Raphael Stone says his team is, quote, still all in. We will examine where the Rockets stack up out west. Maybe we'll talk luxury tax. Maybe we won't. We'll find out. Welcome back to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols, still here with George Sedano, Brian Windhorst. Let's talk about the Houston Rockets. New general manager Raphael Stone expressed a lot of confidence in his team in a chat with the Houston Chronicle over the weekend. Here's the quote, we are still all in. Our goal is to win a championship. We'll do anything we can to get us closer to that goal. So, George, do you believe him and do you share his confidence in the Rockets?
Well, I believe him because they don't have very many draft picks available to them, at least not this season and next season, I believe. I believe the next time they have their pick is 2022. Mm-hmm. So I think because of that, he has no other choice. But I do believe that they'll be in the mix. I think they're a top five seed still in the Western Conference. So because of that, I think they've got a chance. But he may have to make a big trade, I think, to kind of augment that particular roster to really kind of cement them in that championship caliber level.
I think the interesting part about this interview, guys, was that he was very clear about spending into the luxury tax, that he was going to have the ability to spend the mid-level exception into the luxury tax. And that's an important message, not just for the Rocket fans. That's an important message for James Harden, because the person he's really much got to sell on the short-term future of this team is James Harden. And because Harden has seen a lot of change, and not all of it looks so positive, quite frankly, over the last couple of years. And, you know, the Rockets have, you know, a good roster, no doubt, but their roster is thin, and they need some more support on that roster. But they are so close to the luxury tax, something that they have avoided when it comes to spending the mid-level exception, that they have used draft picks to offload salary the last 2 years. And so, look, I'm willing to believe Tillman Fertitta, the owner, and Raphael Stone, the general manager, that they are going to spend and add to this roster. But I'll wait and see. And I'm probably not the only one who's going to be watching.
Well, haven't we heard Tillman Fertitta say before, Brian, that he's more than willing, happy to go into the luxury tax, will do anything that it takes to win, and yet we have seen moves made right before the deadline that gets them just under to a point where it's sure hard to believe that's not purposeful. Where are you on that right now with this iteration? Do you think that maybe the urgency of James Harden's situation has caused a change of heart there?
Well, I think James Harden is probably on board with everything that goes on in that organization for the moment. But look, it's fragile. And I'm just going to say that, you know, Tillman gave a strange interview a year ago when he said he didn't even know how they got under the luxury tax, that it happened by some sort of miracle when Daryl Morey made like three or four trades on deadline day to get underneath it. And like, look, I'm not arguing that you have to be a tax-paying team to be a contender. The Lakers just won a championship without paying the tax. But it goes to where you are as an organization, and they just swapped out their coach and swapped out their general manager and hired people who make vastly less money back-to-back years after avoiding the tax. So I just think, I think that message is out there, and we'll just see what they do. And, you know, in 3 weeks, if they've spent their mid-level and they're into the tax, I'll say, wow, they really are super invested in this roster.
All right, so George, you just heard Brian say that they've got talent, but they're thin. We know that they don't have a ton of size on that roster. Where do you see, George, the Rockets stacking up with the rest of the Western Conference elite?
I got them about the fifth or sixth seed, right? It just depends. Like, you look at the Lakers, you look at the Clippers, you look at the Nuggets, right? You look at the Warriors. I would have them all ahead of the Rockets at this point. To me, it's like they're battling with the Mavs and the Blazers for that fifth spot at this particular point, unless they make a move. If they make a move and they add someone significant to this roster, then maybe that changes them.
I mean, the Western Conference is going to be, and I love that we got to say this going into last season, and we get to say it again, so competitive. You look up and down, and there aren't teams really that are expecting to lose the way we have seen a chunk of those in previous years. Brian, where do you put the Rockets in the West?
Well, they finished tied for fourth last season. Now, they did a three-way tie for fourth. Now, they got the fourth seed, so that was good. But the Warriors are coming in. And, you know, you could argue that if you're fighting for fifth or sixth, maybe you shouldn't spend into the luxury tax. Maybe that you should try to make the best of what you have. And that's why I wonder, you know, where James Harden is with the direction of the franchise. But they have the things that are the hardest thing to get, and that's a franchise superstar player. And he's in his prime, and there's no reason not for him to keep going forward. We'll see how it goes.
Rachel, you know what I think they need to do, and I think there are certain teams that know how to take advantage of this, is mining the G League, right, and scouting everything. I mean, if you're a team that's going to be, in theory, cash-strapped, right, or at least has shown a propensity to be that in the past, not going over the luxury tax, you need to mine the G League. Look at Toronto. Look at Miami. Look at what San Antonio's done over the years. Those teams are not necessarily high-profile, we're going to spend whatever it takes to win franchises. They have in moments, right? Mm-hmm. But for the most part, they're fiscally responsible. But what they do is they develop talent, and the Rockets need to go that route. They've done it with Daniel House. They need to do more of that.
Well, it's interesting. Do you know who used to be really good at that? Daryl Morey.
Daryl Morey. Yeah, that guy. What happened to that guy?
Just pointing that out. Yeah. Pennsylvania, Philadelphia. Okay. Before we go to break, I do want to acknowledge an important figure in the world of entertainment that we lost yesterday. Alex Trebek, the host of the quiz show Jeopardy for 37 years, died yesterday after a bout with pancreatic cancer. Of course, calling Alex Trebek the host of a quiz show is kind of like calling Beyonce a kind of good singer. Trebek hosted nearly 8,000 episodes of Jeopardy, winning 35 Emmy Awards, a Peabody during his illustrious career. Trebek, Canadian-born, but lived in Los Angeles and was so beloved throughout this country. Fans laid flowers on his star at the Hollywood Walk of Fame after the news of his death surfaced yesterday. He also loved sports. Just last month, he announced the Ottawa Senators' first-round pick in the NHL draft. He was also a huge Lakers fan, first becoming a fan of the team in 1973. He would often attend games, even sent Kobe Bryant a congratulatory message prior to his final game in 2016. Here's Trebek telling us his LA Lakers Mount Rushmore back in 2015.
I've always been a big Lakers supporter. My Mount Rushmore would be Kareem, Magic, Shaquille, and Kobe.
Trebek, just a staple in so many of our living rooms for decades. His pitch-perfect tone, his comedic timing will always be remembered. Alex, all of us here at The Jump just wanted to say thank you. He was survived by his wife, three children, 80 years old. The Jump will be right back. The 74th annual NBA draft will be the first ever virtual one next Wednesday, 7 Eastern, 4 Pacific on ESPN, ESPN Radio, and the ESPN app, all from our studios in Bristol, Connecticut. That leaves us only 9 days until the draft, okay? This is as wide open as the draft we've seen in recent memory. We still don't know who's going to go number one or if the Timberwolves, who currently have the top pick, will even keep that selection or trade it. One potential option at the top, 7-footer James Wiseman, who shares a position, of course, with Minnesota's franchise center, Karl-Anthony Towns. Now, Bleacher Report's Jonathan Wasserman reported the Timberwolves could still take Wiseman despite the potential overlap. But, Brian, you discussed last week Wiseman might not want to be going to Minnesota because Towns is there. So is drafting him worth the risk for the Wolves at number one if the guy doesn't want to be there?
Boy, this will bring Timberwolves fans back to the Johnny Flynn, Ricky Rubio draft, Steph Curry draft, where they drafted a couple of point guards and they got the wrong guy, not to bring up a bad memory. But, you know, it's not that Wiseman has anything against the city of Minneapolis or the Wolves organization. He just would want to come in where he would be the franchise center. Just like if LaMelo Ball was on the board for the Atlanta Hawks, I'm not so sure that would be the greatest fit either because they've got Trae Young. So, you know, Gerson Rosas, who's in his second year as a GM of the Timberwolves, doesn't really have a history of a draft record yet. So we're not sure if he would take the most talented player overall. But I have to say, I've been talking to a lot of executives over the last 7 to 10 days. There's been a lot of talk with this draft, and almost everybody has a different opinion about who the top player should be. I know that our experts here think it's LaMelo Ball, but I'm not hearing that out there. I'm not hearing a consensus at all. So the Timberwolves have a firecracker on their hands on what to do with this, and it may be something that they want to get out of this if they can trade back, which is one of the reasons they've been active on the trade market. But good luck to all you folks out there doing mock drafts, because I think this is going to be a year where getting anything close to an accurate mock draft is going to be impossible.
Rachel, I think that the Timberwolves need a veteran presence, right? Like, they've got good young players, right, or ascending players. And, you know, Karl-Anthony Towns was the type of guy that many GMs for years during these GM surveys said you would start your franchise with him. Well, I think what he needs is someone, I don't know, like a Jimmy Butler, maybe not Jimmy Butler,
not but someone. Be Jimmy Butler,
no, definitely not. But someone like that that can come in and help that team grow up to the level where we expect them to be at. We expected this team to have a surge at some point into the playoff standings, and we just haven't seen it. So I would try to trade the pick because certainly Wiseman doesn't want to be there. Maybe you take Anthony Edwards, but then you're just adding another young talent to a team that still doesn't have a lot of veteran presence on that team.
And the problem with trying to trade the pick is there are other teams out there also trying to trade their picks. In fact, right, the team with the second pick, the Warriors, they have a lot of logical places and reasons that they want immediate help as well. The same thing you're talking about with the Timberwolves. They have that window of contention around the now healthy Splash Brothers. So, George, who do you think is more likely to strike a deal to trade their pick, Minnesota at one or Golden State at two?
I'm going to still say Golden State. I think that if Wiseman's there, they consider it. But if you look at some of the reports that are out there, they have scouted guys in the lower end of the lottery over the last several weeks. And I think that is a telling sign, right? That at least gives you the inclination to believe that they are looking to potentially move that pick to add, I don't know, veteran guys to go around those three guys. Because if their quest is to try to go back and win a championship, that bench that they have, while they've got some nice young guys like an Eric Paschal or whatnot that has developed through the G League and played a lot last year, if they want to win a championship, they need guys who are proven and battle-tested. And I think that that would be their best route.
Brian?
Golden State has definitely had talks about moving down. They have been offered some interesting packages from what I have been told, but nothing that has struck their fancy just yet. The big thing for Golden State is what Charlotte does. Charlotte is very interested in James Wiseman and could move up to number one to take him. And if that happens, Wiseman, from what I understand, is Golden State's guy. And, you know, that's the guy they want. Whether or not they'd be prompted enough to try to trade up to get him, I don't think so. But if Charlotte moves up and gets him, then I think you could see Golden State showing more interest in moving back. And that's why a lot of this is going to come down to those few minutes between picks to see how it goes. And there's a lot of things that could happen depending on where Wiseman goes. You know, a player who I've heard a lot moving up on the executives' draft boards is Onyeka Okongwu from USC, who I've heard moving into the top 3 to 5 on a lot of draft boards with Charlotte there. And that may dramatically alter depending on what happens. So I think a lot of teams are laying the groundwork for moves, excuse me, but I don't think anybody has a good feel of exactly what's going to happen yet.
This is going to be very interesting, and a lot of counterintelligence going on over the next week or so as well, as teams try to say that they're doing one thing. Maybe they're, and you know how that goes. Speaking of LaMelo Ball, as you just did, Brian Windhorst, the machine, ESPN's Kevin Pelton releasing his top tiers for the NBA draft prospects. Neither Wiseman nor Georgia's Anthony Edwards made it into the top one tier. In fact, he only had one prospect in his top tier, and it was, in fact, LaMelo Ball. Edwards and Iowa State point guard Tyrese Haliburton, they were in Pelton's tier two. Wiseman actually in tier three, among others. So, Brian, where do you see LaMelo Ball being? And, you know, Pelton obviously puts a lot of number crunching into this. This isn't just, gee, I'm enamored of LaMelo Ball. What do you think of this pick from him?
Well, I'm not Kevin Pelton, and I'm not Jonathan Givony. Jonathan Givony, who has gone to Tasmania to scout LaMelo Ball, thinks he's the most talented player in the draft. I can just tell you that the executives that I talk to, many of them do not agree, and many of them see LaMelo Ball potentially sliding in this draft. Again, the number two and number three teams, Golden State and Charlotte, are looking for big men right now. We don't have a read on Chicago at number three. The Cavs at number five are loaded. If LaMelo Ball doesn't go number one, there are some executives in this league, and it's not a consensus, but there are some executives in this league that could see him sliding way back. And the number six team, Atlanta, has shown a willingness to maybe move its pick. So I can't tell you exactly what's going to happen. We may see LaMelo Ball holding that Timberwolves hat and everything's A-OK, but I'm telling you, my listening to that is not solid right now.
Yeah, look, here's what I would say to echo Brian's point. Kevin Pelton, Jonathan Givony, Mike Schmitz, they have forgotten more about this draft class than I'll ever know. Okay, let's start there. But I look at LaMelo Ball, and I've read the similar reports, right, that are out there that he has not done well in interviews. I could see that being an issue. I also look at the other two top guys in Wiseman and Edwards, and their bodies are NBA ready, okay? I was at the Anthony Edwards workout recently, and I was really impressed with what he could do. And just, I was more impressed with him physically, just being up close to him and seeing what he's capable of, and just that body, the shoulders, everything that comes with this total package that this kid has. But with LaMelo, even though he is built better in, or bigger, I guess, at this age than Lonzo was, I still think there's something to be said about the physicality, right? He has played in a league that's more physical, but not in a league that has the athleticism that the top-tier college game would have. So there are questions to me about what LaMelo Ball could do at the next level still.
It's going to be so fascinating. We will be getting ready.
Regarding
ready for
that
this
report about him not doing well in interviews, I don't think he's done that many interviews, just to be fair. And I'm not his minder, but I would just be careful about that particular piece of information.
We've had him here on The Jump, Brian, and he was great and was really an enjoyable conversation with him. So I am sure whatever he does going forward, he's going to find his niche places. And there's a lot of people who really, really like what he can do. But I am fascinated that there is so much conversation back and forth. We here at The Jump will be getting you ready for the draft all the way going into next week. And in fact, here is what The Jump recommends for today. Previously spoken of, the Tasmania visiting Jonathan Givony breaks down all the latest intel, including several teams that are interested in trading up to the number one spot. All right, Sterling Brown approving a $750,000 settlement in a lawsuit with the city of Milwaukee after he was tased and physically brought to the ground by police over a parking violation in 2018. I'm just going to say that again. Tased, thrown to the ground, you're seeing some of the camera footage there, over a parking violation. The city also pledged to admit that this was indeed a civil rights violation and to make some changes to the department's policies. The Milwaukee Bucks released a statement today, and this is what it said in part. We are pleased that Sterling's lawsuit has been mutually resolved and that there is an important commitment by the city of Milwaukee and its police department to make changes to the MPD's standard operating procedures. No one should ever have to go through the horrifying abuse and injustice that Sterling experienced. So, George, what's your reaction to the settlement?
Well, the fact that they admitted that they violated his constitutional rights, I think that's the biggest piece of all of this, right? I mean, the money is what it is. And I think that he rejected a initial offer of, I believe, around $400,000 because there was no admitting to violating his constitutional rights, which I felt like was a big sticking point. So, that being said, hopefully that this has created a situation where we don't see more of these things. But remember, this was brought to light because he's an NBA player. How many people deal with this stuff that aren't Sterling Brown?
Absolutely.
This was such an unfortunate incident. And the fallout that's happened in our country since then has unfortunately made it easy to forget. And so I think it's very important that there's light shone on this to remind everybody what happened. And obviously to show the resolution didn't just include money, because as George mentioned, he could have gotten money a year ago. He wanted more than just money. And, you know, the Bucks have supported him throughout the entire time. The NBA Players Union has supported him throughout the entire time. And I think it's an important moment. Hopefully it's a learning moment, but it's an important moment for where this league and specifically the players are trying to get.
And it's important too, because George, as you note, if he was an NBA player, I can't imagine we would have ever heard about this. We have barely heard about the people who have been shot and killed, and that's just with the rise of camera phones over the past decade. But again, I want to make this clear. It was a parking violation. He parked in the wrong space at a drugstore parking lot. Mm-hmm. And this is what happened to them. Tased him and wrestled him to the ground. This is obviously not okay, and something that so many people in our country live with every day. You don't have to shoot and kill someone to have an impact on their life and the life of the people around who know that this could happen to them at any moment. It is not okay in America. And I think the fact that the Milwaukee Police Department has made that statement that it's not okay, hopefully will lead to some change there as well, a place that we obviously have had all of our focus on after the Jacob Blake incident in Well in Kenosha, just less than an hour down the road. The Athletic reporting Sterling Brown is indeed part of the new NBA Social Justice Coalition as well, along with several owners, players, coaches. Commissioner Adam Silver and NBPA Director Michelle Roberts will also be advising that commission. So, Brian, what impact do you expect this coalition to make moving forward, since this was the result of the Milwaukee Bucks walkout after the Jacob Blake situation?
Well, first of all, the league has a $300 million fund that they have established over the next 10 years to direct money to social justice and, you know, African-American businesses. And this group will no doubt have a voice in determining how those dollars are spent and where that support needs to go. But the other thing that is also in play here, when the Bucks were dealing with that situation, when they were in that locker room down in Orlando, there really wasn't an infrastructure in place for them to have someone to go talk to about it, to talk about how to address it. And they really felt no choice but to just not go out on the court. The idea behind this is that there is this infrastructure in place, that it's not something that only gets discussed when there's a crisis. And when there is a problem, there's channels and constant conversations that are ongoing so that this can be addressed. This is to avoid crisis. And it won't be perfect. Nothing in this situation is. But I think, like everything else the NBA has done recently, it's a step in the right direction.
Yeah, I would agree. Anytime the NBA gets involved in any social cause, we've seen real change, right? We saw it in Charlotte a number of years ago with the LGBTQ community. We've seen it certainly throughout the time in the bubble. And look, there are more people involved, including owners, right? Mickey Arison, Mark Lazarus is involved. I know Doc Rivers, Lloyd Pierce are involved in this group. And we saw, I believe, that we saw the NBA really swing the election in some cases, okay? 40,000 people voted at the Hawks Arena in Atlanta in a state that we're still counting, okay? So I think that when the NBA decides to get involved in any issue, whether it's social, political, or whatever it is, they certainly make their impact felt. There's no question.
I'm looking forward to seeing what that group does in the coming year and years to come. All right, coming up, Giannis has a big decision on whether to sign a max contract, a supermax contract, in fact. What percent chance will he actually sign it? And what's Brian's idea of an alternative? Stay tuned. Brian has some thoughts. We're going to talk about them. It's crunch time here on The Jump, according to our Adrian Wojnarowski. Chauncey Billups and Larry Drew finalizing assistant coaching deals to join Ty Lue's staff with the Clippers. Now, Brian, when we had Ty Lue on The Jump, I asked if we could have a timeshare for Chauncey because we still like having him on The Jump. He did not give me a counteroffer to that question. How big is this for the Clippers?
Well, look, I've personally had conversations with Chauncey about his desire to someday work with Tyronn Lue together at an organization. It almost happened in Cleveland a few years ago when Chauncey was offered the president's job. This is something these two guys have wanted for a long time. Now they're getting their opportunity.
I'm super excited for him, Rachel. Look, there's something about point guards in basketball and catchers in baseball that make for great coaches. And look, he has led a team as the point guard and the floor general, and I think he can help tie in that staff. That staff is really good, by the way, with Drew, Dan Craig, who they stole from Miami as well. Like, they have amassed a nice staff there. I just hope, though, that the Clippers can borrow the Detroit Pistons in arena guy for occasionally, so they occasionally can just announce him as Chauncey Billups.
So, yeah, we're going to have timeshares all over the place here. Look, it's during COVID time. A lot of us overlap and do other things, and there you go. I mean, it is interesting, too. I mean, Chauncey's had a growing relationship with the Clippers. He did analysis on their TV broadcast this past season. I think it's such a good organization for him, considering he does have all of these ideas about what he might want to do in the future, because not only can he have the coaching experience with Ty Lue, but that is such a strong front office. So to be able to be up close and sort of see that decision-making, we know that Chauncey might want to run a team one day. He certainly would be more than qualified to do it. And getting a little finishing school with the Clippers would be pretty great, too. So good luck, Chauncey Billups. We will miss you sitting at this desk. But, you know, maybe we'll still, it's just across the street. Maybe we'll just still drag him in just once in a while, okay? Let's talk about a little football, because as soon as Clemson's last attempt to score in double overtime fell short the other night, Notre Dame fans rushed the field as if their team was not playing during a pandemic. LeBron tweeted out after the game, quote, "So it's okay for fans to storm the field, but not okay at the same time for us to have fans. I'm confused." George, of course, it's not actually okay for the fans to storm the field. What was your reaction?
Oh, I was cringing immediately. And I feel like anything I watch now, I have that reaction. Even if it's something from the past.
Like an old movie. You're right. Like, wait, don't all
don't do that. Don't, the germs. No, don't. And look, I know people are going to get on me because I don't tend to love Notre Dame anyway. But this has nothing to do with that. Trust me.
Well, when I was in college at Kent State University, I took a sociology class about crowds. And some of the things I would take away from it is sometimes in crowds, people do things they wouldn't normally do, which is one of the reasons why the experts say no crowds right now. And so right there is Exhibit A.
And I would also point out, while rushing the field, thousands of people, is not a good idea outdoors or indoors, so no. Also, the difference with the NBA day is, of course, they are dealing with indoor arenas. And we put up here on The Jump a couple times last week the restrictions on indoor gatherings in all these states. In a number of states, the indoor gathering limit is between 10 and 25 where the NBA is playing. They're going to have to get special permission just to stage games, much less have fans in the arena. So storming the field or not, LeBron, I'm sorry. I think we're still a ways away from that in a lot of places around the NBA. Not all, but a lot. All right, let's move on, because after Joe Biden was elected president, Draymond Green took to Twitter and said, "Yo," this was for LeBron also, "y'all can go to the White House now and celebrate your title, G." LeBron replied, "We back up in there." He said, "I'm taking my tequila and my vino too." Now, Brian, of course, LeBron and the Cavaliers were the last NBA team to go celebrate their title. It was right after the 2016 election, and they rushed that visit in. I was actually there in Washington, D.C. with them to get that visit in before President Obama left the White House. Do you expect them to visit the White House after January 20th this year?
Yeah, that was some day, Rachel, because Donald Trump arrived to meet with Barack Obama after getting elected that same day. It was some day in D.C. But the other thing I would say is, you know, look, LeBron, 4 years, he didn't win a title. 4 years never became an option. Now that he's won again, it's back on the table.
I think what you'll get is teams from the past, even, that will be like, "Hey, can we get our visit in now? Can we squeeze in now, too?" So it'll be an interesting moment for the schedule maker there at the White House.
That's interesting. I didn't think about that, George. Now, Brian, what you're talking about, I believe that is what we call correlation without causation, but a good point. Certainly, it's been 4 years. The back-to-back MVP facing a major decision this summer. Sign the Supermax extension that he will inevitably be offered and commit to Milwaukee long-term, or turn it down. Now, that doesn't mean that he would ask for a trade. It just means he would not sign an extension early, but that would put him on the path to become a free agent after next season. Now, he could always, Brian, of course, sign a Supermax extension with Milwaukee next summer, but I heard you talking about this on your podcast, and you had another option going. In fact, you hearkened back to a situation between Paul George and the Oklahoma City Thunder. Could you lay out what you were talking about there for your TV audience who don't happen to listen to the Hoop Collective podcast?
I have to just say, Rachel, I feel I already feel for the Milwaukee Bucks fans if he doesn't sign this extension, because it is going to be a day-by-day pressure fest. I've been there on the front lines feeling that. It is not comfortable. But at the same time, if Giannis signs it, he really trades away his options, really in for no reason other than to be nice to the Bucks. So is there a middle path here? Is there a negotiation that can be done? And there may be, as you mentioned, which is what happened with Paul George and the Thunder a couple years ago. Now, this wasn't publicized, it wasn't formalized, but the Thunder were worried about Paul George leaving. And so they said to him, look, why don't you sign a long-term extension here? You're gonna be with us. And if for whatever reason you feel like you don't wanna be here anymore, we'll work with you privately and quietly to trade you. And a year into that extension, that's exactly what happened. And they handled that trade as clean and quiet as possible, and both sides benefited. Now, nobody can predict the future, but it's an $82 million difference for Giannis Antetokounmpo between signing this Supermax extension or leaving and signing somewhere else. So that's got his incentive right there. And could the Bucks and Giannis have a secret agreement under the same thing? And he would be tied to the team for at least 2 years, because you can't be traded for a year after signing the Supermax. And you would be committed to the team, you would get your money, you would remove the pressure, but you wouldn't 100% give up your optionality. And look, this is not something that that the Bucks could ever come out and talk about, or Giannis could ever come out and talk about, but I gotta believe it's something that they have to have discussions about as they head towards now a deadline, which is the start of the season, for him to sign that extension or not.
You know, Brian, that's an interesting scenario, but here's the down. Now, I'm going to play the Scrooge here, okay? Here's the downside to this. I would say that if he leaves in free agency, he's the bad guy. But if he asks out of the deal, I think that could be worse, potentially, from a PR standpoint. At least that, because he could always go back to saying, well, I'm a free agent, this is what I've been playing for to get to this point and make a decision. Where if you ask out, I think you could potentially look worse. And here's the other part of this. What if Milwaukee says to him, yeah, we don't think we're getting enough back, so we're not going to deal with it or deal you somewhere. Then you could have some potential issues there and it can get contentious. Like, I don't know if that's in the best interest of Giannis from a public relations standpoint.
Brian, you're shaking your head.
Well, first off, it's messy. It's not clean. Of course, it's not clean. It can't be formalized, and it's about trust. But yes, it's way better for the Bucks for Giannis to do this, because in the event that he, in 2 years, was not happy with the direction of the franchise, they could get a return for him. And the return that they could get for him would be huge, because he'd be under long-term contract. If you look at the return that the Thunder got for Paul George, now granted, that was slanted because Kawhi Leonard was a part of the deal, but look at the return that the Thunder got for Russell Westbrook. They got that because he was under long-term contract. Anytime you ever would leave a franchise, if you're a star player, it would be difficult. But if you did this, not only would you keep the Bucks in some peace in the short term, give them a real chance at this season without being distracted, you would also open the door that if for some reason down the road it doesn't work out, that you do want to leave, that the Bucks could get a king's ransom for you in return. And no, it wouldn't be like free agency, because you wouldn't be able to choose your team. But the amount of power he has, he probably would be able to direct it. And again, this is not something that I think can be used on a regular basis, but I do think it's a middle path. It's another option that could be explored where everybody could get what they need.
I appreciate that. I think you're making good points, but I'm with George. I got to say, if I was Giannis, I would not do that, because then you are in the position of having to be the actor in a year or two and having to be the force that asks out of there. I think that is very delicate, even if you will be technically leaving the team in a better position, because they will get assets for you. And the fact that they will get assets for you, by the way, denigrates the team that you would be going to, because you talk about Russell Westbrook getting traded, right? Well, guess what? Houston had to give up a lot for him. Talk about Paul George and the trade. You know that the Clippers gave up a lot for Paul George.
$82 million.
And well, but this is the thing, and you know I've said this on the show for years, since the summer, you were sitting at that table with you, me, and Tracy McGrady, when the Supermax got passed initially after 2016 season, Kevin Durant goes to the Warriors, and they come up with the Supermax, and I said to Tracy, you tell me, I don't have $82 million in my bank account ever, so I cannot tell you how I should feel about this. Is an $82 million bribe enough to derail your career in a place you otherwise would not want to be in? And player after player we have seen has said, whether it's Anthony Davis, whether it's other players, have said, no, you know what? it's not enough because I can make up that money in other places with other contracts over the ensuing years. We just have not seen that bribe work. And that doesn't surprise me with the kind of players that we have who could be in line for that
kind
of money.
You know what else we haven't seen, Rachel?
Do it.
You know what else we haven't seen?
Come on, bring it.
We almost have never seen a player, a star player who's on a contract that doesn't extend, end up re-signing with his team.
That is true.
Paul George was an outlier. Now, it happened with Steph Curry because his contract was set up. He couldn't really extend. Players who don't extend often leave. Getting an extension is vital, and it puts everything on a better timeline. If he does not extend, even if he has great reasons, he is going to put enormous pressure on this Bucks season. I'm telling you, it's something that should not be dismissed.
I agree with that. I mean, George, obviously he can't sign in the middle of the season. He's got to sign either before December 22nd,
right,
or not again till the following summer. What do you think it's going to be like for the Bucks and Giannis if he doesn't sign the Supermax, even though he could still sign it the following offseason?
I think it's going to be tough, to Brian's point, but I think you can shut that down. Like, you just say, look, LeBron's done it, right? Other guys have done it. Like, I'm not answering free agency question, guys. You can ask all you want, but we're just moving on to the next thing.
Well, we did see with Kevin Durant, there was a lot of a magnifying glass and pressure on that team, even though he did say, I'm not discussing it. It's worked out differently for different guys. But I do think that Giannis could kind of shut some of that stuff down, and we probably will see him do it either way. All right, George, Brian, thanks for joining me. The Jump back on ESPN tomorrow. We'll see you guys later. See, producer Steve wasn't sure we get all that in, and look, boom.
Look at that, Steve. You doubted.